Happy to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School, with us to talk about, well, your aches or pains or sprains or strains. I hope you'll join in as we move along today at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Lori, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
And Bill, same to you.
Likewise. Always good to be back.
So yeah. What are you seeing this summer in the way? Anything unusual coming your way, or is it the same old?
Anything unusual? I haven't seen anything terribly unusual. Saw a lot of people with sore butts on a bike ride I did a few weeks ago. And hello to Pat, I think from Eau Claire, who I met on that trip, who was also riding her bike across Iowa.
500-mile trip, correct?
500-mile trip with my 11-year-old. Yep, it was great. And lots of people who did that whole week ride, some sore butts and some sore knees. But, you know, I think people train now before they go on a big bike ride, or they're going to do the Madison Mini Marathon, or they're going to do a triathlon. I think people are hearing the message that training is key to prevent injuries.
Yeah, preparation.
Yeah.
And the two P words, preparation and prevention, they go hand in hand.
Yep.
Tell you what,
yep.
On a long bike ride like that, you really, if for no other reason than just for your butt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because yeah. If you don't practice on that bike.
Yeah.
Right. And you want a good seat and good shorts.
Yeah. Being on your own bike is different than riding a stationary bike or anything like that. You just got to put in time on your bike.
Right. Well, Bob in Claybanks has a question for you, too, so let's go there. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having the show, Larry.
Sure.
I've got some bursitis in one of my knees, and I was wondering what kind of exercises I could do to reduce the chances of that happening again.
Was that bursitis in the front of your knee, like a prepatellar bursitis?
I guess I went and saw my doctor, and he said one was warmer than the other, so it detected some inflammation. I guess right behind the kneecap, is that where it would be?
There are some bursa there. You can also just have some wear and tear arthritis underneath your kneecap, too, called patellofemoral pain syndrome. So that could be the cause of that as well. Has the warmth and inflammation gone away at this point?
Yeah, he prescribed an anti-inflammatory and icing it 3 or 4 times a day, and
okay.
Swelling seems to have been going down.
And you know what precipitated it?
Well, I ride my bike 3 times a week. I do about a 9-mile circuit, and I've been playing a little more golf recently than I have in a while, so he thought it was overuse, and it would make sense with some of the activities I've had lately.
Okay. Well, then in the prevention category, I would say strengthening exercises, particularly for your hip muscles, the muscles around your hip, doing some leg lifting, leg press kinds of activities, straight leg lifts with some weights would be good preventive. Some stretching of the muscles around your hips and knees would be helpful. When you're golfing and so on, make sure you're wearing good shoes, make sure you're warmed up, make sure you're stretched out before you go. And for your biking, again, make sure that your bike fits you well, that your seat is at the proper height. And when you bike, I would suggest a higher cadence and less resistance. Try not to push hard like you're pushing up a hill, but to use your gears.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those would be the keys. And if you're feeling like your knee's sore during any of those activities, then to ice right afterwards.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. There you go,
okay,
Bob.
Thanks much.
You bet.
And yes, sir, in Stevens Point, on to you now. Hello.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a question for you. Ask me a couple of questions. I have a muscle pain. Sometimes it comes to like the lower part from the knee down, and sometimes in my feet. And I couldn't figure it out for a long time. And I went to visit multiple doctors, and they say there's nothing. But it hurts me sometimes. And so I was thinking, is the diet has an issue? And the second question, if I exercise, will it get worse or better?
If I can ask, is it both legs or just one?
both of them, but the left is worse than the right.
Okay. And is it the front of the leg, back of the leg, or the entire leg?
Let's see, the front of the leg. But then you have the front of from the knee down, you have the front, and then you have the top, the front of the feet, and sometimes the bottom of the feet.
Okay. All right. And is there a particular activity of when this will come on? Is it with sitting, walking, running, biking?
Usually when I wake up in the morning, it hurts. But actually, it's almost most of the time. And it comes, and sometimes there's no pain, and sometimes it drives me crazy. I cannot even go to sleep.
Okay. All right. And any numbness or tingling at all with it, or is it just pain?
Just pain, and sometimes tingling, yes.
Okay. All right. Do you have any back problems? Any problems in your low back area or mid back area?
Sometimes, yes. Associated with it.
Okay. All right. Well, exercise may be important for you and good for you. It was a good thing you went to see your physician to be examined. Anytime we have symptoms in both legs that are not specifically related to a particular activity, and especially if there's tingling involved as well, you worry about nerves involvement, and that could be happening in your legs. It could be happening up in your spine.
So yeah, I have my brother, he's a doctor overseas, and I told him, and he says, check with your physician about autoimmunity disorder. And I checked, and they say, you're just fine. You cannot pay to get a better result. But they say I'm fine, but the legs are driving me crazy.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, again, I'm glad you went to see the physician. And again, what I'd recommend at this point is to see a physical therapist. Based on what you have described, it would be hard to recommend a particular type of exercise. The physical therapist could examine you and help sort out, is it primarily your lower legs and feet, or is it coming from your spine, or a combination of the two? And then that will determine what type of exercise program would be most helpful for you. So that would be my recommendation. I think you'll get better faster that way.
Okay, so physical therapy, you don't need to get just a regular physician to take a test, a blood test and stuff.
Well, as long as you, I'm not sure what your physician did. So did you see a physician?
I did see, like I said, the internal medicine doctor.
Okay, all right, yeah. Good.
And he took the test, everything, and he says, you know, you cannot pay to get a better result. You're very healthy.
Good. Well, that's the news you want to get. You know, if you had not had those tests done, then I would recommend go see your physician. But the fact you've had those tests done, I'd recommend go and see a physical therapist, and they can examine you, your lower legs and your spine, and try to sort out, one, where is this coming from, and then, two, what would be the best program for you.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, yes, sir. Appreciate your call. And Lisa in St. Germain, we're on to you now. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks for... Oh, you know what? Before we start with Lisa, I want to go back to Yasser's question about diet. Could diet play a role in that? I'm sorry we didn't get to that right
now.
Yeah,
and I forgot. That was his first question, actually. It's possible, and I don't know what blood test the internal medicine physician ran, but I'm assuming that if there were things really out of whack, potentially related to diet or other disease processes, that it might have shown up in the blood tests.
Okay.
So it's possible, but the fact that he has the tingling and pain in both legs, I'd probably be thinking about his spine first, you know, assuming what the physician probably has sorted out.
Okay, great. Lisa, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello. About a month and a half ago, I was at an outdoor all-day concert, and it started midday, but about late afternoon, early evening, both of my knees started aching. And by late that night when we got to our hotel room, I could barely walk, and the next day I had a hard time walking. Just bending my knees was killing me. I'm a very active person. In fact, I've done 2 triathlons this summer. I have another one scheduled. I did see my doctor about 3 weeks after and told her they were aching, and I thought maybe for some reason they were bruised. And there's no inflammation, never has been. And the worst, they hurt the worst when I'm trying to sleep at night and in the morning when I get up. They do not bother me when I run. They do not bother me when I ride my bike. And some days, for no apparent reason, they're worse than other days.
Were you, by the way, were you sitting on the grass? Were you sitting in a chair during this concert?
Oh, we were sitting on the ground. We were sitting on a blanket. I mean, we got up and moved because it was about an 11-hour ordeal, but mm-hmm. we walked around, and it was very, very hot that day.
Uh-huh. Were you sitting mostly with your legs crossed, like crisscross applesauces?
Well,
that
you know,
I can think of.
Because it was so long, I mean, it was moving around.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I mean, then
all right.
At times we were standing up and dancing and, okay. you know, crisscross, and then when they started mm-hmm. bothering me, they started aching, I started extending my legs and icing them down, and
okay. And may I ask your age?
52. I just okay. turned 50. It was actually 1 week before my 52nd
nice.
Birthday.
Nice. What I'm speculating, since it's both knees, and given everything you've told me, is that it's a little bit of arthritis. It follows that kind of pattern where they like to move. Joints like to move. They like to be active. They like bicycling. They even don't mind a little running, but they don't like to be still. They especially don't like to be still in a flexed position or actually fully extended either. Both of those are going to be hard on it. So it was such a deviation from your usual activity pattern
mm-hmm.
That I think that just some underlying arthritis just got stirred up.
And no inflammation with it, though, so...
I don't know how... I mean, when you say there's no inflammation, there was no visible swelling?
Exactly.
Yeah, there doesn't have to be swelling.
Uh-huh.
In the early stages, you can get sort of that deep, achy pain from your subchondral bone. That's kind of where it starts. That's where the pain receptors are before it actually gets to the point where your synovium starts to have an active synovitis, where you feel that warmth and that reaction. So what you're probably experiencing is the very early stages of that.
Okay.
So I just... keep up with your activities. You might try a little bit of Tylenol or Advil later in the day before bed and see if that helps you to sleep. Mm-hmm. You can talk to your doctor about that, but I'd maintain your exercise program. I would make sure to keep your body weight down, to make sure you're eating a good, healthy diet, you know, all the anti-inflammatory kinds of foods, omega-3 fatty acids, you know, magnesium, vitamin D, all those things to do as much as you can to optimize your joint health. You can think about a supplement like glucosamine chondroitin.
Think that'll help a little?
It helps
Would
many
it
people. It helps many people, and as
helps
long
me.
As you're not allergic to shellfish,
uh-huh.
This would be the time to start it before you get terribly symptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. you're very active. You want to prolong your joint health as long as you can.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Judy and Waukesha, we're on to you now. Thanks, Judy.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Good. I've been told by two different surgeons that I need posterior tibial tendon surgery, and I've been doing a little research on my own about it, and have researched and seen that, you know, kind of positive and negative outcomes with this type of surgery. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on it.
Do you know what are they doing the surgery for? What kind of surgery?
I'm flat-footed on that side, on my right side. And they're thinking of you know, replacing those tendons. And also taking, I guess, part of the bone from the heel
mm-hmm.
and basically just restructuring.
Okay. So a surgical reconstruction of your foot because of your flat-footedness.
Right, yeah.
And is your foot terribly symptomatic?
Well, there's also a bunion on that foot, too,
mm-hmm.
and I'm having that bunion surgery done at the end of the month.
Okay.
I couldn't do it all at one time because of, you know,
sure.
my work situation.
Sure. So, so are you very symptomatic from your flat foot?
Are you talking about pain and that
yeah.
type of thing?
Yeah, yeah. pain, decreased yeah. function.
I've actually had an orthotic in for the past year, one of those really hard plastic orthotics,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
Which didn't help very much.
Okay.
The only thing that really helps it is like ibuprofen, you know, like four four to six times a day.
Okay. And have you tried a soft orthotic?
Actually, yes. I have those as well.
Okay.
It helps somewhat, yeah, okay. But I have difficulty finding good shoes because of the bunion.
Okay. So, and have you had some physical therapy for this?
No, I have not. Neither doctor that I went to see even suggested it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that might be a place to start, especially if you're concerned with the surgery. You know, it sounds like getting the bunion surgery done at the end of the month would be a good thing, especially because it may help expand what kind of shoes you can wear and may increase your ability to tolerate your arch supports.
Mm-hmm.
But I also recommend some therapy. Because increasing some strength around the ankle in the lower leg and even farther up your leg can improve your mechanics and how you function. What tends to happen is when people have pain and they have muscle dysfunction and so on, especially in the foot, they change how they move and you end up with this sort of progressive spiraling downward of your strength and function. And sometimes people find that when they get their strength back up and they can function a little better, that their symptoms are not as bad, or at least not enough to warrant surgery at that point in time. So I'd suggest giving that a try before you go on to the surgery. It doesn't sound like the surgery is urgent in nature. And you would probably have a better surgical outcome if you were stronger prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, would I ask the doctor to recommend the therapy, or could I just go to a physical call up a physical therapy office, or how would I go about doing that?
That's what you can do, Julie. You can call the physical therapist's office and just explain the condition you have, and they'll ask you about insurance.
Okay.
It may be you need a physician referral, and other situations you don't. But I want to follow up with what Lori said. I agree with her. And after the bunion surgery, it's important that you get your range of motion restored, especially the big toe.
Okay.
Because if that's stiff and doesn't bend in certain directions, it'll throw off the middle part of your foot and the back of your foot and the ankle.
Okay.
And also, if you go see a physical therapist, make sure you bring in both sets of arch supports, orthotics, so they can see what you have and then examine your foot and ankle, and that may be helpful too.
Okay. Should I request a physical therapy from the surgeon that does my bunion?
If the physical therapy clinic and your insurance require a physician prescription.
Yeah.
Not all insurances do.
Right. And the surgeon will let you know when you're ready for rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. There'll be an initial healing time frame when really it just needs to recover from the surgery itself. So getting the release from the surgeon to begin rehabilitation, that you'll want. But then where you go, where you choose to go, that's up to you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Judy. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests, as we talk aches, pains, sprains, and strains. Jim Packard, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we have some open lines here so we can get you on pretty quickly with your ache and pain or strain or sprain description. Oh my gosh, there's lots there. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Let's turn to Courtney in Madison next. Hi, Courtney.
Hello. Hi, Larry. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got a question about some soreness that I have in my shoulder. I'm a squash player and have been playing for many, many years. And now the last few months I've had some kind of soreness in my shoulder that the little bit of research I've done, I think it's rotator cuff soreness. And I'm just kind of wondering if this is something that I can, kind of do stretches and maybe not play as much and put ice on it or heat on it when necessary. Can I beat it myself or do I need surgery? That's kind of what I'm wondering.
Oh, I'd hope you can beat it yourself.
Yeah.
Where does your shoulder hurt, and does it hurt only when you're playing squash?
It doesn't really hurt when I'm playing, unless in certain – it doesn't hurt. It's not a sharp pain. It really hurts. Mainly when I go to bed at night, I feel some soreness.
Mm-hmm.
And then also when I've found the rotator cuff stretches online and When I do those, I feel it. And but it, since I've started doing those, it feels a little bit better.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay. And no history of injury?
No injury okay. ever All there, right. no.
Okay. I'd suggest a strengthening program for your rotator cuff. Not necessarily a stretching program at this point.
Mm-hmm.
There are those who believe you should stretch first. I'm not necessarily one of those. So a strengthening program for your rotator cuff, I think, is the way to go.
Okay.
You can use light weights if you have light weights at home.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some sort of classic exercises that you can do. For example, lifting in the plane of your scapula, which is about, 30 degrees forward of the horizontal plane, and just raising your arm up, or with your elbow bent, rotating your hand away from your stomach, things like that. Mm-hmm. So if you found the stretches online, you can probably find some of the strengthening exercises online too. The real question comes down to dosage, because it sounds like your stretching was hurting, and the exercises shouldn't hurt. It shouldn't be painful.
Mm-hmm.
So usually you take your exercise to the point of fatigue where you're feeling like, that's getting tired now, but you stop before pain because
mm-hmm.
that's just overloading it, kind of like you are when you play squash.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd suggest a strengthening program and giving that a try for a few weeks. And since you are a squash player, which is a pretty high-speed activity, I would recommend progressing your exercises by gradually increasing the speed
mm-hmm.
While under control. And then when you can do 30 to 50 repetitions at a moderate pace,
mm-hmm.
Then going up in the weight.
Mm-hmm. And starting with like 2.5 pounds or mm-hmm. a little bit less? Or?
It depends upon the length of the lever arm. So when you're doing straight arm exercises, a little less. If you're doing bent elbow exercises, you can tolerate a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And do you think that I shouldn't play squash at all until I kind of get to a point where the soreness is gone? Or can I? I was hoping to still play and then put ice on it. And
yeah.
I have a heating pad for maybe, in between when I'm not. I've been told that heat is good.
I'm not so sure about that. I'd stay away from the heat. I'd stick with ice.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'd say go ahead and play as long as it's not getting away from you.
Okay.
So you have to kind of look at the big picture and make sure that over time you are continuing to improve gradually, not to worsen gradually.
But I should do the strengthening exercises before the stretching. Just work on the strengthening.
Yeah, I'd work on the strengthening at
All
this
right.
point.
All right, I will do that.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thanks for calling. Tom in Knoxville, Iowa. We're on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Great.
Well, what I've got is on my left foot, on the back of my heel, kind of underneath and to the corner, I got a place that about as big as a half dollar that just gets really hard and calloused, and I try to take a pommel brush or stone and try to get the old stuff off, and I don't know, the thing just won't heal up correctly. I'm not sure what's going on.
Tom, when you say heal up, is it a blister? Does it scab over? What do you mean
by
heal?
No, it just gets like a real hard callus on it,
okay.
And then it kind of cracks, and then mm-hmm. if that comes off, then you're like clear down to
yep.
where it starts hurting.
Okay, got it. Any other spots on your foot like that, or is that the one spot?
Nope, that's the one spot. It started right after the first of the year, and I've actually went and had a couple pedicures. I thought maybe that, and I had my feet done, and I thought maybe that would do it. They kind of worked on it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just every, seems like when I wear sandals or something like that, it just like it dries it out or something.
Okay. All right. Well, calluses form primarily due to friction and repetitive friction. And, probably if a physical therapist is going to be able to help you with this, it would be related to your foot and ankle mechanics. Most often, when somebody has an excessively flat foot, they can develop calluses up around that big toe and more toward the ball of their foot, not so much the heel. And if you change the alignment of the foot and the ankle, that changes the forces coming through the skin, and that can help with calluses. I would think, one visit to physical therapist could tell you. You know, if you bring in your normal footwear, they could examine your ankle and your foot biomechanically and see if they think that there's anything that might be able to change with an orthotic or with exercise that may help you with this. They should be able to know pretty quickly.
Yeah, the question is, why did it start now?
Right.
And why just one foot? So it makes me think that there was some biomechanical change, or there was some change in your activity where you became more left foot dominant, something that was putting more stress on your left foot, or you changed shoe wear that exacerbated an underlying issue or something. But there has to be some reason why it's only one foot and why it showed up in January. And a physical therapist can evaluate your footwear and try to figure out what's the cause of the problem. And then once you get it treated, then it shouldn't come back.
Yeah, because the odd thing is, like, on the weekends it'll be good and I'll wear sandals or something, just like flip-flops or some other better sandals, and it kind of comes back, and then I can wear lace-up shoes all week, and the thing will be just fine.
Yeah, well, that would support Bill's biomechanical premise, because a good lace-up shoe will control your foot motion better. And a sandal, even a good sandal, doesn't afford enough support, so your foot tends to move around and slide around and mechanically doesn't work as efficiently. So it may be simply related to footwear.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Tina in Sparta, we're on to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling about my 14-year-old son. He plays baseball, basketball, and football, and has in the past jammed his fingers, mostly in his left catching hand, more often than his right hand, twice playing football and once sliding back into a base playing baseball. And they've recovered, and I'm just thinking some kind of preventive training, strength training, so that we can make sure that his fingers don't have this problem in the future.
Well, unfortunately, it's a much more situational thing.
Kind of occupational hazard.
Yes, I guess occupational hazard would be the best way to put it. So, in terms of injuries, there are kids who tend to get injured more frequently or have more of certain kinds of injuries, and it tends to be more related to their skill and how they play than necessarily their strength or preparation. There are some injuries that are clearly skill dependent, things like ankle sprains and ACL injuries. You can do all kinds of training to prevent hand injuries. I'm not sure that any kind of strength or mobility training will impact that, because they are more an occupational hazard. They're more related to your skill. So I guess my question or my recommendation would go back to coaching. And is there anything that he's doing in how he catches the ball, how he transitions it from glove to hand, or et cetera, that's placing him at risk for hand injuries?
Yeah, and for sliding in the bases, I've heard this explanation once, and I can't tell you this is the reason why. I've seen some baseball players, they have sand, they have a little dirt in their hand to kind of keep their hand clenched. And I heard one explanation was that it's to protect their fingers as they slide in head first and reach for that base. Now, you don't hit the base quite as quickly, but it's a way to protect their fingers. So I'm not sure that's the only reason why they have dirt in their hands. But so I think it comes back to what Lori mentioned in terms of coaching, both related to the sliding and the catching. Football is just kind of a little different animal based on the nature of that particular sport.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure there's a specific type of exercise that's going to prevent these kinds of injuries from occurring.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling. An email from Mike in Mercer. Mike says, I'm a 72-year-old man who's had rotator cuff surgery on both shoulders. Now, after 10 years, one of the shoulders has been diagnosed with a new tear, as well as a large bone spur and a loose bit. There is considerable discomfort with this situation, as well as a noticeable weakness in the shoulder. The complicated surgery that would be necessary to rectify these problems would require prolonged rehabilitation. Makes sense for someone my age to undergo such surgery? I can I actually rebuild the lost muscle strength?
Oh, what a good question. Does it make sense? You know, the older I get, the more these ages don't sound so old at all. Say 72, I think of my parents who are in their 70s and how active they are. So I'd say it really is an individual choice. The question, I guess, that I would take back is, do you need that extensive a surgery? I mean, I'm wondering if they're talking about going in and trying to repair the rotator cuff. At this point, at 72, I'd say go in, take out the spur, which may be aggravating it, and the loose body, if there's got a loose body in there. Take those things out because they could be 75% of the problem. They could be why he's getting progressive weakness, not necessarily because of the tear. They've done cadaveric studies, and almost everybody across the lifespan has rotator cuff tears, which are progressive as you get older. So I would say for a 72-year-old to have a small rotator cuff tear is a normal finding. At this point, I wouldn't say he needs to have a rotator cuff repair. I'd say you go in and you do a removal of the spur, you take out the piece, and then you rehab. And the rehab from that should be fairly quick. Now, I'm not a surgeon. That's my disclaimer. But from the rehab end of it and what we know about the epidemiology and natural history of these kinds of problems, that would be my recommendation. Yeah.
There you go. Let's go to Chris in Stoughton next. Chris, hello.
Hello. I was wondering if you could help me out with a problem I've been having. I've been having a bit of tendonitis in the fibularis longus region, like the top insertion point.
Of which muscle?
The side of my knee, below it, the lower leg, kind of like the fibularis muscle.
Okay, there's the fibula bone.
Okay, like right above the fibula.
Right above
on the lateral side of the lower leg.
Okay. And
so let's just,
tell me a little bit more about your symptoms and where the symptoms are.
It's right below my knee, you know, about 3 inches right below my knee.
Mm-hmm. On the outside.
Yeah.
And what aggravates it?
You know, biking, walking, pretty much standing.
Okay.
Pretty much moving it.
Okay.
In general.
And have you seen anybody?
I have not. No.
Okay. I'd start with getting a good evaluation. You know, the 3 inches down on the outside of your knee, it's not an insertion point for anything.
Okay.
So I think getting a good evaluation and examination to figure out why you're having that pain and what is the source of the pain would be the place to start. That's just not an area that commonly hurts from a muscle point of view. So, you know, there could be, you know, there's some muscles in some compartments on the outside. It could be, you know, a peroneal problem. It could be something deeper. It could be something referred from your knee joint itself. So there's just too many possibilities.
Could it be related? I have on the malleolus on the ankle on the lateral side down there.
Uh-huh.
The tendon, like, doesn't stay put. It pops over there a lot.
Okay, so
the retinacula down there doesn't seem to hold it.
Okay, well, that could be related to the peroneal muscles then. Those are the muscles that go behind there. So some subluxating or dislocating peroneal tendons. So, again, that'd be a good situation to have a physical therapist look at. There might be some taping or bracing they could do or some neuromuscular training to help you stabilize that. And that could be causing some of your symptoms higher up as well. Those muscles could be overworked as they try to stay behind that malleolus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
So,
good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. And Barb in Oshkosh, we turn to you now. Hi, Barb.
Hello. This is a wonderful program. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually calling for my daughter because she is a runner. She runs 3 times a week, 2 to 4 miles each time, and she started having problems with her Achilles tendon and her left leg, but she kept on running on it, and she just did more warm-up exercises and things like that. Well, now she got a stress fracture in her right foot. So she went to the doctor, and he just told her that she should just rest everything, and then when it's fine, she should start again. And I'm thinking, after listening to your program, do you think she should be getting some physical therapy for that tendon? The tendon problem, yeah.
You're
before she just starts running again?
You're so wise. Mothers, they're so on the ball, looking out for their kids. Yeah, I mean, this is the golden opportunity for her to really work on her Achilles while she's not running. One of the hardest things is to get an Achilles better while someone is running. And just like your daughter showed us, people, when they start running, they don't like to stop for anything.
Now she's
forced to stop because of the right foot. So this would be the time to get that Achilles handled so that when she goes back to running, the Achilles is ready. And I assure you, just resting it for the however 6 weeks she's off with the stress fracture, when she starts running, that Achilles will be speaking to her from day one. And it's probably why she got the stress fracture. Right. She probably changed how she was running because of the Achilles, and she got the stress fracture. So... So I would support you 100%. You can tell her I said so, that she should get in and get this handled so that she's ready to go. And if she's not running, physical therapists can also give her some alternative activities to stay active while she heals her stress fracture, deep water running or other things like that.
All right. Oh,
wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. We had an email from Dawn who says, I have acute onset wrist pain in the left wrist that comes every few months. Very painful for anywhere for a few days to a few weeks and then disappears as fast as it came on. No visible swelling. I've been to a hand wrist specialist and did a manual exam and an x-ray and couldn't find anything of note. I have Crohn's disease. Is this a possible peripheral symptom of that?
It's possible. What Dawn describes is kind of typical of an inflammatory process of some origin, and there's a variety of conditions that can present that way. And wrists and hands are common places for us to show up. And the x-rays can be negative for a long, long time. So it is possible. I think what makes it challenging is if it goes away as quickly as it comes on, you know, unless Dawn would go in when that wrist is acutely painful, it can be difficult to diagnose and difficult to nail down. It doesn't sound like a tendonitis, you know, some of the other calls that we've had over the years would not necessarily present this way. So it sounds like potentially something a little more systemic in nature, and Crohn's, it's a possibility that it might be linked to that.
Greg in Bloomington, Minnesota, we turn to you now. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A little more than 3 weeks ago, I severely dislocated my right dominant arm elbow, and after getting knocked out and putting it back into place, I've kind of been going through some therapy, et cetera. Mainly the orthopedist has been telling me some exercises, one day of physical therapy. But I'm just wondering if you know of any exercises to increase mobility. You know, it's kind of tough relearning how to brush your teeth, et cetera, with your offhand, because I can't get that right hand back up to my mouth and or get the arm to a, you know, straight position again, like if you were going to do, you know, hang from a bar and do pull-ups, et cetera.
Right.
Any sort of motion or movement, or am I looking at not pushing too hard too early yet?
Well, you're going to physical therapy, is that correct?
Well, I had one day, and they kind of sent me a bunch of exercises. This was about 5 days after the accident.
Okay.
And my insurance, I have to get it doctor approved every time. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what has the doctor said to you about restrictions at this point? Any restrictions?
Continue movement until you get a little pain and then slow up. And so that's kind of, I have three young kids at home and been doing my best chasing them around right now. And, you know.
All right. Well, a couple things. It sounds like you don't have a lot of restrictions. It's sort of self-imposed. So apparently the physician is not worried about healing. And so on. You said it was 6 weeks ago? Did I get that?
3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago. Okay.
Yep.
All right. I can tell you this. Elbows get stiff in a hurry. So this isn't something that you want to delay on and wait 2 or 3 months and see if it gets better, because they're tough. So I would get back in to see the physical therapist, see somebody face-to-face, and get a good home exercise program of mobility exercises that you can do. Stretching, there's some, you know, gentle joint mobilizations. There's some things that the physical therapist can teach your spouse to help you with. So take
my big question, and And it was, you know, the last time I was there, like I said, was 6 days after. Now it's been 3 weeks, and
right.
I have a lot more mobility than I did then.
Right.
But it gets to a point, and it just doesn't move on its own unless I kind of, you know, push it with my left hand or push against the wall, door jam, whatever, the same thing with going straight.
Yep.
And am I okay to continue to basically, you know, push it further than it's able to go on its own and hope that that will stretch things out? Or am I still dealing with, you know, not letting the inflammation go down or agitating it more?
No, at 3 weeks, you're okay. You're okay. I'd push it gently. I mean, you should not have any increased pain the next day. The pain shouldn't increase or come on sooner when you start the same exercises the next day. All those things that you look for, that you're overdoing it. But I tend to be a little more aggressive with elbows than other joints just because they do get stiff in a hurry, and it's your dominant arm. And if you can't fully turn your palm up and straighten your elbow, it can have a significant impact on your function for the rest of your life. So I tend to push those a little bit harder. Ice it when you're done as frequently as you can during the day. So don't wait and just do it once a day, because what tends to happen is you push it too hard when you do it once a day. But try to find things that you do during the course of your day where 8, 10, 12 times during the day, you're doing some stretching. So you're telling that connective tissue it needs to be longer.
Yeah, Greg, Greg, the other thing the therapist can do with you besides exercise is some manual therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But the sounds like the fact you've gotten some motion back already is a good sign, a good prognosis. But there's some manual therapy, things the therapist can do to help facilitate the exercises that you are doing. And so I'm not sure how your insurance plan is set up, but I would get more than one visit approved. You know, I would think, you know, at least 3-4 visits, and they may be spread out a bit over a few weeks, you know, to get as much motion back as possible.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault are guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking aches, pains, sprains, and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Thank you for listening in. Julian Appleton has a question for our guests, so let's turn to Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Love the program.
Thank you.
I'm calling in regards to my 66-year-old mother. She's had a history of bone spurs, weak ankles, her knees drop in on one another. And this winter, she was out shoveling with her boots loose, not tied up, and there was a pebble in there, and she didn't feel it. And the pebble rolled around enough that it caused probably about a 2-inch hole in her foot. And the hole is still healing. The podiatrist put her on a small boot and upgraded her to a larger boot that goes up to her knees. And the boot is so heavy she doesn't like to wear it, and obviously driving is an issue because it's on her right foot. I was just calling to see if she should be going. She hasn't been going to any physical therapy, and she's pre-diabetic, so exercise is important. So I'm just calling to see what you would recommend from a physical therapy standpoint for her.
Yeah, I think it certainly is worth the attempt, considering how long it has been and still hasn't completely healed yet. There are some different things that can be done to promote wound healing and recovery.
Okay.
There are some physical therapists that specialize in wound care, and that's probably where I would go. If she can call or you call the local hospital and talk to the PT department, or if there's a large private practice, but you'd want somebody with some wound care experience and specialty.
Okay.
So the answer is yes. There's some special equipment that can be done. Maybe something else with her, with that boot or footwear, to make it a little more comfortable for her. But again, the therapist will know fairly quickly whether there's something they could do to promote this healing.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Right now, the podiatrist just said elevate it and stay off her feet.
Oh.
Yeah,
but it's been a while.
Yes.
You know, it's been since January or February.
Yeah, and you're right. With her medical status, you're going to want her doing some sort of exercise. So a physical therapist can also give her some things with some resistive bands or leg lifts or things like that to keep her strong, or she's going to be in trouble when she starts getting up and moving around again.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. And Sean in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Sean.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
A friend of mine is a podiatrist and has not very high regard for a new shoe that's out there. I think one of the manufacturers is Skechers Rocker Bottoms, and he said he didn't like that because with the rocker bottom and people doing as much walking as they are, that it's hyperextending a lot of people's knees and having knee issues. And I was curious if you guys had any information on that.
Yeah, you know, anytime a new shoe style comes out, it always helps our business to some extent.
Yeah.
And, you know, you bring up a good point. There are some people where the shoe will be great and it'll help them. It'll help them with their walking. It'll help with their shock absorption and load transfer and things like that. Then there's going to be other people who don't tolerate it because we're not all the same. Everyone's different, and there's always subgroups of patients that do really well with certain things, and you hear that when people call in. You know, I tried an orthotic, it was great. I tried an orthotic, and it was terrible. I tried a night splint, it was great. I tried a night splint, it was terrible. So we can't really lump everybody together and presume the same intervention will apply for them. So, you know, absolutely the rocker bottom would promote some hyperextension during gait. And that's going to bother some people. It's going to stir up their knees. So as always, one of the reasons why we recommend that people go in and see a physical therapist rather than just tell you to try this or that is we understand that not everybody is the same and not everyone will respond to the same intervention. It needs to be applied in the right set of circumstances.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, when somebody dramatically changes their footwear, as our example here, if they wear those shoes all the time, the body has no chance to adapt to it. Mm-hmm. And even if it's a good thing, if the body can't adapt quickly enough, you start developing symptoms. So it's transitioning. When you try something new like that, is not to overdo it and increase the dose steadily over time. There's a better chance it may work for you.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
For just in general, do you have any, if people are going out to just get general shoes, do you have any basic recommendations on shoes to offer them good support?
Yeah, one of the keys is to make sure it has a good firm counter around the back so that it control your rear foot. So shoes that are really flimsy in the back aren't going to control the back of your foot. And so if you don't control the back of your foot, the forefoot has a hard time doing what it's supposed to do. So the first thing is to get a good solid heel counter. The second thing is to make sure that you can tighten it sufficiently so it can control foot motion as you go through the range of motion. And thirdly, it should have sufficient flex at the ball of your foot. If it's really stiff, if you take it and you try to bend the toes up and it's really stiff and hard to push up, it's going to put a lot of load on your Achilles as you try to move against that stiffness. So that's another key thing.
Yeah. I think those are the basic principles that I recommend as well.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Sean. Marty and Hubertus, on to you now. Hi, Marty.
Hi. I have a couple of questions, if you've got a minute. For the last week or 10 days, I've been having a lot of pain in my right shoulder. It started out of nowhere. It's more of an aching. And I heard you talking about torn rotator cuff, and I had tried to look this up online. I have not seen a doctor yet because I don't even know what kind of doctor to see.
Okay, Marty, was there an injury or accident? What do you think brought the shoulder pain on?
No, I just woke up with it in the middle of the night one night.
Okay. Ever had pain like this before?
No.
Okay. And any of the joints that are bothering you, other shoulder, elbows, wrists, hands?
I'm having some problems with my thumbs, but I'm pretty sure that's arthritis.
Okay, so that's not new for you?
No.
Okay, all right. Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 67.
Okay. All right. Well, it could be rotator cuff, and that's probably what it most likely is. The key is, are you getting better or are you getting worse compared to a week or week and a half ago?
I was thinking this morning it didn't hurt as much, and that was while I was still lying down listening to you.
Okay.
When I sat up and swung my arm forward.
Okay, all right. That's
no,
good.
It's not that much better.
Okay, all right. So, and when you lift something with that arm or reach something for, what kind of pain or discomfort are you having?
It doesn't seem to be a problem when it's a terrible problem reaching back.
Okay.
Right. If if I try to reach behind myself.
Okay. All right. So there's some range of motion deficit as well. Well, you know, I think even though it's just been a week and a half, I think somebody examining your shoulder and also examining your neck, since there's such a close connection, could be beneficial. One, to help you get over this, and then second, to help keep it from coming back again. The question is, why did it come on in the first place?
Right.
And sometimes it related to posture. Sometimes it's activity related. Sometimes people have muscle imbalances where you have a local area of weakness that if you can address, because obviously, most likely this will go away, but the key is you don't want it to come back again.
Right.
And so it's probably worth having somebody examine you and see what they can recommend for you.
Would a chiropractor be as...
Well, my recommendation would be a physical therapist.
Okay.
Would you want, so here's, you want somebody who can address from muscle length, muscle strength, as well as joint mobility, as well as coordination. And there are certain types of shoulder problems where people need a lot of work on their back in terms of trunk stability, which, again, are certain types of exercises.
Okay.
So, you know, someone who has that combination of skills and knowledge base, I think, would be your best bet.
Well, my grandmother had her hair cut for the first time in her life at 72 because of bursitis.
Oh, she'd always cut her own hair.
Okay. All right.
Can I ask you another quick question?
Mm-hmm. We've got just a few seconds, but go ahead.
Okay. I have a totally deteriorated disc, and I'm bone on bone in my lower back. I've had epidurals. I've had the other shot. I can't remember the name of it, which has helped some. I'm trying to avoid surgery. Would a chiropractor help that, or should I just...
All right. At that moment, we'll let our guests think about that. We'll be back with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. Stay with us. Taking a look at aches, pains, sprains, and strains with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, Lori's senior physical therapist at the Sports Medicine Center at UW-Madison, and Bill is an associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. And we had Marty from Hubertus online with us. And Marty, Bill, do you want to go ahead and explain what the issue was there?
You bet. The second issue Marty brought up was this degenerative disc disease. She mentioned she basically had bone on bone in her lower lumbar spine, low back area, and had an epidural and another shot that helped some. And she asked about seeing a chiropractor, and sounds like she is, if that's who she has seen before, comfortable with chiropractors, then help lots of people with low back problems. When you have bone on bone degeneration, conservative care of any type is not going to restore the disc. It's not going to relieve the bone on bone. And so whoever she sees, it's important that they help promote really, really good hip flexibility so that when she does bend and twist and move, the hips are doing more of the work and that low back area is doing less to take some stress off that bone on bone. And then that combined with a good trunk stabilization program is also critical. Folks like this, if they respond to manipulation or adjustments, it's going to happen fairly quickly. It's usually more of a short-term fix as opposed to long-term. So whoever she sees, that would be my recommendation of the approach that would be taken.
All right. Let's turn to Kathy in Bayfield next. Kathy, hello.
Hi. About 5 or 6 years ago, I had a severe sprain on my left ankle. It didn't heal properly, and the doctor sent me to a podiatrist who said I had an accessory ossicle that was keeping it from healing, and said I would need to wear inserts, insoles that were stiff, and tie-up shoes for the rest of my life, which I have been doing. And I've been trying to start running again, and I can get up to about a quarter mile of a combination walk-running, quarter mile running combined with walking, and then I get pain in my right hip down to the outside of my right knee, and it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
Indeed. Where is the accessory ossicle?
In my left ankle inside.
Okay. Okay, so it's not behind... It's not behind your ankle. It's inside.
It's not the lateral side. I don't know what you call the inside where it faces the other ankle.
Okay. Have you been to physical therapy at all for any of this?
No, I haven't. It healed up okay, and I could hike for 5-6 miles, and I'd like to be able to run to get some more aerobic exercise. And I can run 3 miles of a walk-run program, and then when I get up to a certain point, my right hip just goes painful.
Okay. Well, getting on a good core strengthening program that increases the strength around your hip, upper thighs, low back, can be very useful. There's a number of gait mechanical problems that originate at the core. So the combination of the foot injury, the new orthotic, et cetera, I'm sure has thrown off your gait to some extent. So I think getting an evaluation of your hip and core muscle strength, and then getting on a good home program as an adjunct to your running would be very helpful. So, you know, the kind of pain that you describe would typically be an overuse that's more than likely related to a biomechanical problem. Mm-hmm. So if we can correct the biomechanical problem, get you on a strengthening and flexibility to optimize those mechanics, then that'll give you an opportunity to increase your running without the hip pain.
Can I ask one more question? The orthotics I have, I can kind of feel myself running on the outside of my right foot, and I tried to correct it. Should I try to just change the orthotics so it's not pushing my my arch up so high, so I'm not running on the outside of my right foot? Would that be worthwhile?
It's hard to answer that question.
Okay.
During normal mechanics, you land on the outside and travel, you know, somewhat down the lateral border of your foot, and then through your midfoot, your pattern of weight bearing moves towards the inside and out your great toe. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if you're spending too much time on the lateral side of your foot, and if your podiatrist has done that intentionally because of how the inside of your ankle looks. I can't address that question. So seeing a physical therapist and having your gait evaluated with that orthotic, with a different orthotic, would be useful. What I wouldn't recommend is taking the orthotic out and trying to run, because you spent 5 or 6 years in that orthotic, and to suddenly change your mechanical loading pattern abruptly, especially in a running gait, is going to ask for trouble. So I think you need some guidance through this process.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Jim and Nishkoro, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. How are you folks doing? About 15 days ago, I woke up and really was unable practically to get out of bed, just aching pain. I woke up during the night. I had a lot of tick problems earlier in the year, so I went to see my doctor. He prescribed something for me. I took that and went back to him. There hasn't been any let-up. The only thing I can do is take ibuprofen, and that makes it possible to just even, like, walk around. So I'm a bit confused. I guess we'll do some other tests, but I thought in the meantime any help would certainly be appreciated.
Jim, where's the achiness?
It's in my entire body. At first, I thought it was mainly joint-related, but now I'm thinking it's more muscular.
Yeah. Okay. When somebody presents with achiness, basically the entire body and joints versus maybe and also possibly muscle, I mean, you're right. You need to think something systemic. And if you've had some tick issues, you did the right thing by going in to see your physician. And they'll know what kind of blood tests to do and also how to follow up and monitor.
I'm sorry. We did the blood test, and it was negative, but he decided to give me another 10 days of, I think it's in the other part of the house. So I'm taking another 10 days of dicyclamine or something like that.
Okay. All right. And then are you to follow up with the physician?
Yeah, he said come back in, and we will then, if there's still problems, I guess try to do some other tests. He even said, was one of the possibilities lupus. He did not stress that, but that was...
Right.
And I'm wondering, because a friend of mine suffered from that, and sounded like a lot of the same problems. I'm now every night up at midnight and just rolling around, and I sleep during the day, but it doesn't seem to be lessening, other than, of course, when I take the ibuprofen, but I don't know how long I can take that.
Right, right. Well, it sounds like you're having a really tough time. And again, if you had not seen a physician yet, I would tell you go see one soon. You know, at this stage, you're working with the appropriate person, and I would take the medication as it's been prescribed. If you become dramatically worse really fast and feel like you're running a temperature, you know, before the next 10 days are up, give your physician's office a call. But I would stick with the plan working with that physician at this stage.
Okay. There you go. Thanks, Jim, for calling. And Lynn in Evansville, on to you now. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My questions, and I have two, are regarding to my right total hip replacement operation. It's uncemented. I'm about 3.5 months post. I had a the femoral component has a ceramic head. The acetabular component is polyethylene. My question is to do with appropriate exercise. I did my immediate post-op exercises religiously. I've now been given some advice in terms of appropriate exercise longer term. I'm choosing biking. And I'm, my question is, in terms of wanting to have this particular device last for as long as I can, I know I can't be doing certain activities, but if I'm doing biking, either road or stationary bike, is it better to do fast turnover, low load, or slower turnover, higher load if I'm trying to get a good aerobic workout? Is there any study that looks at the stress that it puts on the components and their longevity, to your knowledge?
There are many studies in the basic science literature looking at loads on joints and material properties and material wear and things like that. Most of the wear and tear comes from weight bearing. There's less wear and tear from bicycling. That being said, the greater the load, i.e., the more resistance, the greater the muscle contraction. So theoretically, you'll have a little more load on the joint with more resistance. Now, after saying that, the other thing I'll say is that the stronger your muscles are around your hip joint, the more they will offload the joint itself. So more load, if dosed properly, can actually be beneficial because it will strengthen around your hip more than a low load, high repetition will. So the short answer to the question is I do some of both.
Thank you so much. And I have one quick second question. It has to do with thigh pain. Again, I have the unloaded device in my thigh. And occasionally when I'm lifting, carrying some loads, I experience, or pushing a heavy lawnmower, I have some thigh pain, and obviously the bone may still be affixing itself to the device, and I don't know how to differentiate between bone pain, which I would pay attention to, and muscle pain, which I probably would ignore and continue doing. Is there any advice or guidance along those lines, how I know what's what?
It can be difficult, although bone pain tends to be deep, really deep, and a deep ache, a deep throbbing sensation. Muscle pain, it tends, again, if it's your quadriceps, it's a little more superficial. You can palpate the muscle. You can, you know, so you touch, you put pressure on the muscle. If it's the muscle is going to be tender and sore. And, you know, where you would want to be concerned is pain that is deep in the groin area or deep in the butt and maybe moving down into your leg. That would be more likely related to the surgical procedure that you had received. And again, so the further down the leg the pain goes, usually whatever tissue is more irritated. But muscle you can usually tell because you can palpate it, feel it, and it's not going to be as deep a discomfort as the bone pain is going to be.
All right. Thank you, Lynn, for calling. Appreciate your call. Anne emailed us and said, wonders if you have any ideas for healing up tendonitis that's accompanied by some swelling near the inside of the inside wrist bone and the meaty part of the hand palm. The brace with splint that the doctor gave me prevents further strain but seems to make the area more tender and sore.
Was that the thumb side,
so
is she saying?
It's going to be something near the area of the inside wrist bone and the meaty part of the hand.
We're all sitting here looking
at our hands going, well, it depends upon
so where's the beat?
Exactly. Show me the beat.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like she's seen a physician for it, so she does have some guidance in that area. There are different exercises you can do for tendinopathy. And, you know, the big question is why she's having it now. She has it in one hand and not the other. So it may be related to, it's probably related to some activity. So then we look at modifying that activity, how that activity is performed, whether there's any postural things we can do, whether there's any help we can provide in terms of dosing how she does that exercise to prevent the overuse. And then there are specific exercises that we do to treat a tendinopathy, but they have to be dosed in the right way for the right stage of healing. So it sounds like she's immobilized now, which suggests to me that at least the physician feels that she needs to rest this. So there's just a tremendous number of variables that a physical therapist would take into account as they decide which exercises are the right ones and in what dose and then how they're progressed. So if she hasn't been to therapy, I would recommend that she go see somebody to get some guidance with that.
Here we have an email from Muriel who says, I spent 2 days, 4 to 5 hours a day on my knees weeding our extensive flower gardens back in May. I now have pain in my left knee, medial and lateral, that hurts whenever I bend my knee beyond 90 degrees. I've had to dial down my treadmill use, speed and incline, and reduce the weight on all my exercises involving my knee. My internist says I have a crushing injury and I should ice and take Tylenol. He indicated that it should improve over time. I'm wondering if there's anything else I can do to hasten the recovery. I'm 69 and 20 pounds overweight. I work out three times a week at a local fitness center, and half hour on the treadmill, half hour weights and toning. I'm losing weight slowly, and now that I can't work out my normal level, I'm afraid I won't be able to continue the weight loss.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So I guess the take-home message is hire some kid who needs a little bit of extra capital before mm-hmm. the start of school to weed that garden, because mm-hmm. it's not worth it. She's doing the right stuff. What she's done is modify her current exercise program to the point where it's not increasing her symptoms. So that's a good thing. She's icing. She should continue that. I think that's a great thing. The other thing that she could consider is if her fitness center has a pool, to get into the pool and do more walking in the pool just to get an extra dose of exercise that isn't going to be too stressful on her knee.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like the water would be a good medium. You know, the other exercises that she's doing, some may be helpful and some may be actually aggravating things. You know, in terms of, it sounds like she's cut down her exercise program to a degree. But that's also where, again, maybe just one visit to the physical therapist to walk through her current program, examine her knees. There may be some things she needs to add or put on the side, put on hold to help this heal. But I agree with Lori and with Muriel's plans of losing weight. She's doing the right thing. She wants to get over this as quickly as possible.
Let's turn to Diane in Whitewater. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Sure.
I have a question I have a problem sitting for long periods of time, car rides and long meetings. And I've gone to a therapist. They gave me about 10 sessions, which helped a little bit, he said, to work on core muscles, and I have been doing that. It is not the kind of pain that that goes down my leg, so I don't think it's sciatica, but I'm not the doctor. But it would be right on the bone that contacts the chair. I don't notice it going about my daily life, except I do notice it if I'm running, and I run about 5 miles twice a week. And I notice it in high-rising kicks when I do karate. So any suggestions?
Diane, is it back pain or hip pain?
No, it's the bone. In exercise classes, we would say it's the sits bone.
Got it.
It's the bone that just contacts the chair.
Okay. Yeah, so we have a sit bone on each side, kind mm-hmm. of in the buttock area. And right, what you're describing is not classic for sciatica. Was there an injury that brought this on?
No.
So
I think it's come on gradually for a long time.
Okay. And well, the core strengthening is important, and the kickboxing. I'm assuming you do lots of stretching.
We do stretching before for about a half an hour. Yes.
Okay.
In karate.
All right. You know, there are a lot of muscles that attach to the sits bone, including the hamstring and some other short hip musculature. I guess the hope would be that with the core strengthening, that you're also working on strengthening around the hip. If there's any kind of strength imbalances around that hip that could put more stress on the hamstrings and also some other muscle groups that attach there.
You think it's a muscle problem, not a bone problem. I'm concerned, like people have said, well, then maybe you shouldn't be running, because if it hurts when you're running, maybe you shouldn't do that much running. But I really don't want to give up the weight-bearing exercise, because I'd like to in any way postpone any osteoporosis or prevent any osteoporosis without any medication.
Yeah, you bet, you bet. Well, the sits bone, unless there's been local trauma, it's a fracture is unusual.
Okay.
You know, and again, major trauma, you can have the tendon can pull a little piece of the bone off, but it doesn't sound like that's the issue either. I would think it's either more related to posture or, again, muscle imbalances. But the fact that the things that you described, it doesn't match the sitting, but with the running, you know, your ankle and foot mechanics, and with the kickboxing. So if, you know, I would think that if the therapist would address, also looked at your legs, examine your foot and your ankle, and examine your balance on one leg versus the other leg, mm-hmm. that would go along with the core strengthening to help this over time.
Yeah, we did balancing exercises.
Yeah, it also, just the way you describe it, could be a little bit of insertional tendinopathy, mm-hmm. because your hamstrings insert right at that sit bone. And when you have the pain with your running where those hamstrings are decelerating your leg as it's coming forward, and as it's decelerating your leg as it comes up in the kick, that's one consistent pattern in both those activities. And then sitting on it's going to be painful. So you may do well with what we call an eccentric hamstring program. And there's some really great models out there of ways to do that where you focus on the lowering piece of it. So if you get to a physical therapist who knows some about sports and activities and tendinopathy, I think an eccentric program may help you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling. And Mary Ann in Laval. Oh, we just lost Mary Ann in Laval. Let's go to Susan. Do you have a quick question in Coon Valley?
Yes, quick question is, I've been diagnosed with a torn meniscus in my right knee, and they gave a cortisone injection, and it doesn't seem to be doing the trick. One of the things I use is a treadmill. The treadmill seems to make it worse because of the repetitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, do they know if these torn meniscus can heal by themselves, or... I really don't like having cortisone shots. What's your experience with them? Because I was not given any exercise.
Okay. All right. Well, you should have some exercises. That's one thing. Most meniscus tears do not heal. A few small tears in the periphery will heal, so your doctor should know if you had an MRI where your tear is. If a meniscus tear is left in and it's not healing, it has the potential to worsen arthritic symptoms in your knee. So if you've done what the doctor says, you're not getting better, then you should go back for another consult. But in the meantime, see a physical therapist who can get you on an exercise program that works, given that you have a meniscus tear in your knee, so that things don't continue to deteriorate.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Yep. Thank you very much for calling. And with that, we're out of time.
Another day.
Yeah. Another day.
Another injury.
Yes, yes. Good callers.
You guys did a wonderful job as usual. And you'll be back on September 20th.
Yes, we will.
Fantastic.
Look forward to it.
September 20th. And you guys listen to What Do You Know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Michael Feldman's going to be on the show tomorrow. This show, his program, What Do You Know, turns 25.
Wow.
25 years. And so... Michael Feldman's going to be on with me tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and we're going to talk about things that happen.
Great.
Probably Jim Packard.
A few stories, I would imagine.
Jim Packard stories, I'm sure, will come into play there. So we'll look forward to that. And then we're going to switch gears entirely and turn our attention to pottery, Wisconsin pottery, as a matter of fact, with Jim Riordan of Madison and Dave Knutson of Wanakee. both with the Wisconsin Pottery Association. In the meantime, thank you all very much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.